Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly, our regular review of the competition that nobody wants to win. Now, if that was actually true, it would at least explain why Real Madrid and Barcelona are employing Zinedine Zidane and Ernesto Valverde. It can't just be for old time's sake, can it? A week is a long time in La Liga. A few days ago, for example, Barca were brushing aside Valladolid with Messi sparkling. This weekend, I suspect he was asking himself whether he'd mistakenly put on the wrong shirt. And in fact, Levante were Barcelona and vice versa. And with Barca struggling, the coast was clear for Real Madrid to storm through. And you know the rest. So we got to Sunday night and Granada would go top with a win. But once again, no thank you, they said. And well done to those Granada fans who went home early with the scores level and their side aiming for top spot in La Liga. It was raining. Elsewhere in sport this weekend, we saw the final of the Rugby Union World Cup. Now, to our listeners from parts of the globe that weren't subject to the enlightened despotism of the British Empire, rugby is basically American football without pads and helmets, played by men whose ears make you feel sick. It's a hard man's game, usually decided by a baffling penalty or two. So essentially, Sevilla versus Atletico Madrid. VARs around the world are now awarding penalties for giving dirty looks in the penalty area. It was curious, to say the least, that Sevilla's Jules Koundé was allowed to crouch down and grab the ball in the scruff. But then it was beyond 90 minutes, so maybe the VAR had gone home. If they don't pay me overtime, I'm not working overtime. Fair enough. Sue Fadal of Betis also employed the rugby union defence. OK, he blocked Benzema's cross with his hand, but the ball clearly went backwards, not forward, so it can't be a penalty, I think. Anyway, ring the church bells, light the beacon, sound the horns. He's only gone and scored. Sandro Ramirez, goal machine. Fox in the box, the predator. His last goal was in a Europa League game for Everton in 2017. The opponents that night, if I remember rightly, were Constantinople Town. A mere 54 games later, and bang, the vital third in a 3-0 win in the 90th minute against Mallorca. Right, sorry about last week. We are a very big operation here. We employ a large team of media professionals who produce these podcasts. And last week, he wasn't very well, so we couldn't do it. I had written an intro taking the mick out of Terry's commentary and poking fun about the future of La Liga in the world of the European Super League, because we had no Clásico, of course. It seems a long time ago. Terry is here, as you can hear, back safely from his trip to Barcelona. And Terry, the trapdoor has sprung open, and all three of the bottom three now in La Liga have sacked their manager, Fran Escribar, just as we're about to record. Celta Vigo have confirmed four successive defeats, placing the bottom three. No great surprise that he's gone.
No, but you look at the results on their own, four successive defeats. Three in a week. There was the big so-called final against Betis in midweek, which they lost. But for me, the most damning aspect of it was the body language and the attitude of the players in the game that Celta played against Hatafe. Denis Suarez was substituted, and then we saw him covering his head and being consoled by a member of the backroom staff. He was in tears. Lobotka came off. He was in tears. I know it can be demoralising. It's all you live with every single minute of the day when you're going through that type of run that Celta are on. But you have to be mentally stronger than what we saw from them in the game. Their body language wasn't great. And then you see those two players substituted. It's great that they care. But there is, you know, you have to be mentally tougher than what we saw from the Celta players. So when you see that reaction from the players, I mean, for God's sake, we're at the first week in November. You know, we're not, you know, games running out, four or five games left, and it's almost becoming impossible to stay up. It's any sort of type of winning run gets them back in the pack. It's too early yet to be as despondent as they were. So I, watching that game, watching the reaction of those players, watching the body language of the players that were on the pitch, they were pretty much a beaten team. And the last team you want to face when you're in that sort of mood is Getafe, because they're not going to take it lightly. So it was no surprise to see Getafe pick up the points. They're on that type of run. They're heading in the right direction. But the mental toughness, the difference between the two sets of players was alarming. And therefore, you have to believe that a change is needed at the top, and that's what Celta have done. I'm led to believe in the press that Santi Solari is the manager that's most likely to take over. So that would be interesting, bearing in mind he's not a manager of great experience. Short spell as manager of Real Madrid, which had its good moments, but we won't know whether he's going to be the right one until, you know, sometime towards the end of the season.
He's a nice bloke, Santi. I wonder whether he's got the inspirational qualities for that job. We're not supposed to criticise the clubs, are we? We're supposed to like all the clubs, but Celta Vigo get on my nerves, Terry. Empty seats, downgrading the squad over a period of time. Don't, you know, the stadium's miles away from the fans, that are a long way from the pitch and all of that. It's
always raining.
It's depressing. Yeah, it looks depressing, doesn't it? It looks like a grim place. And I think this is not, you know, this is not it. Is it 3 goals in 9 games? I mean, something needs to liven up about the place, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, it's in terms of inspiration, you just need someone to go in and lift. It can be done in different ways. It can be probably an arm around the shoulder, I would imagine, if it's going to be Santi Solari. It can be someone like Jose Mourinho would go in and just take complete leadership of the whole club and hope that everyone follows him. I'm not suggesting for one moment it's going to be Jose Mourinho, but I'm sort of coming up with an example of different personalities, how they would do it. So it would be interesting to see if Santi, he's an ex-player, of course, not for Celta, but has probably gone through similar situations. He will have empathy with the players. But, you know, they do need picking up. They need to be mentally tougher. And they need to start picking up wins really quickly. Thankfully for them, their game next week is pretty straightforward. It's one that any manager would love to take over because, you know, it's 3 points pretty much guaranteed. Barcelona away is the first game for the new manager of Celta Vigo. So, yeah, it's. I'm not sure he's going to be rushing to sign the contract because I'm sure we'll discuss in the podcast there's two Barcelonas this season, one at home and one away. So if you were playing them at home, you might fancy your chances. Away from home at the Camp Nou, everything seems to be okay with Barcelona.
So Celta Vigo's fixtures coming up, as you say, quite rightly, Barcelona. And then after the international break, it's Villarreal and then Valladolid, Leganés, Mallorca, Levante, Osasuna. You can see why they sacked him now, can't you?
Now.
Because, okay, right off the Barcelona game. But then when they're back from the international break, you've had a couple of weeks to work with them. Most of them are not internationals at Celta Vigo.
Yes, no, it's a good point.
That's decisive, that period then, isn't it? If you go through a spell like that and you could be out of it if you have a bad run.
Yeah, and I think there was high expectations for Celta this season because of the players that they signed, the players they kept. And there was issues last season defensively, which they have improved on. You look at the stats in terms of it's not an issue of conceding goals left, right and centre, which was the case last season. But another lost Maxi Gomez. But you look at the front line. I know Rafinha and Santi Mina weren't available in the game against Getafe. But you look at Rafinha, Santi Mina, Iago Aspas, Denis Suarez. It has to be performing better than what we're seeing from Celta. So the fact that they're scoring so few goals, 7 all season, is massively disappointing. And it's not a surprise that the manager is going to be sacked and relieved of his duties in the hope that Celta will be looking to I mean, there was a lot of people who were really getting carried away with the fact that they'd signed Denis Suarez and Rafinha, but I always felt it last season with Maxi Gomez and Aspas, they had enough goals in the team. It was not conceding at the other ends, which has tightened up, as I said, considerably. But so it's a big surprise that they're not more frequently scoring goals. Aspas just got one goal this season. So that's clearly where the problems with the team lie this season, in terms of confidence from players who have got the quality. I'm not suggesting for one moment they should be pushing for Champions League just because they've got a really talented front four. But they should be in the position they are now.
Right. Shall we move on to a team? Actually, we're top of the league, so it's not quite a crisis. But Barcelona. Talao leads the calls. Valverde needs to go. It is time. Gabriel from Barca Talk Podcast. Is Barca's road and big performances under Valverde simply due to a super relaxed locker room where there doesn't seem to be consequences for player performance? Side says, how long do you think Valverde has if things don't improve? When does it come that enough is enough? And Hamza, is Ernesto Valverde's Barca... No, he's totally on the other side. Hamza says, is Ernesto Valverde's Barca the most underappreciated Barca coach, considering he took over a squad of which the spine of the team is over 30? They've lost Neymar, Iniesta, Xavi, and has only lost half a dozen matches in 3 years. So there is the case for the defence. I must admit, watching that game against Levante, Terry, oh, it was hard work, wasn't it? It wasn't an enjoyable. The first half, they grounded out Atletico Madrid style, and second half they got blown away in 10 minutes.
Yes, no, I it's really hard to judge Barcelona this season. I think that we look at their home form and they've had some really good performances. You mentioned the result in midweek, the performance of Messi in particular, but we can't ignore their away form this season. I mean, defeats to Athletic Bilbao in the first game of the season, Granada now being blown away by Levante. It's, you know, draw at Osasuna. My issue with Barcelona is it doesn't bear any resemblance to the teams that we saw from Pep, and to a degree Luis Enrique. It's just, I'm seeing Barcelona players in possession of the ball desperately searching for one option. In those teams, it was just about picking the right option, because there was four or five different decisions to make for any player that was in possession of the ball. There's no huge advantage to Barcelona now when they play teams like Levante, in terms of, you look at the stats and you go, cool, no wonder what they won that. They had 78% possession. You know, it's almost impossible to get a win when you've barely got the ball, which the opposing team, it used to be the case against Barcelona. But I am wondering now about the future of Valverde. I have to be honest, I don't see a leader type at the moment. And that, despite that squad being full of world-class talent, they still need someone in charge. I'm not so sure he is at the moment. I was flabbergasted by the remarks of PK, where he said, I can't believe it's true for one moment. There might have been some players willing to change their contracts in order for the club to be in the realms of financial fair play to allow them to bring in Neymar. Now, that I've been a player, that's just never going to happen. You sign Griezmann for Atletico Madrid, and then within a month or two, you say to him, oh, by the way, any chance that the lads are having a little whip round to get Neymar back, any chance he's going to take your place, but is there any chance you'd reduce your salary? You go and say that to Ousmane Dembele, who's the same. Oh, we want to bring in someone to replace you. Is there any? That's just not going to happen. Frankie de Jong just turns up this summer. You're not going to say to him, we want our mate brought in. Can you take a cut in wages on the terms you agreed 2 or 3 months ago? So that is kind of bizarre that they're still banging on about bringing Neymar back to Barcelona when they're in the middle of the season. There's no transfer window and there's enough for... I mean, I total respect for Gerard Piqué. I know he's got his doubters. I know he's one of the first players that's criticised for Barcelona when they do have poor performances. But I think he's genuine world class, been one of the world's best central defenders. But there's a limit to where you can push it. He isn't president yet. He probably will one day. But that is nothing to do with him. It's not his concern. It's just about concentrating on getting the Davis Cup right, first of all. but just concentrate on getting, doing his job at Barcelona. If he's not going to be focused on that, then retire. You know, he's not going to be short of money. He's won everything he possibly can win. But you can't do both. You can't delve into, making remarks that such as that. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous to think that. I'm guessing it's Piqué, Messi and Suarez, which doesn't then work well for Griezmann, because he's thinking, well, those two don't want me here. And I think there's evidence in the games that that's becoming quite clear, that perhaps he isn't integrating into the 11, particularly up front with Messi and Suarez, as well as everybody expected, as well as he probably expected. And I now see signs of Griezmann's form suffering. He was one of a whole host of players in that Barcelona defeat against Levante that was absolutely dreadful. So I think they need a leader. Do they need a new leader? I don't think it possibly can be Valverde. I don't think he's in charge of the club at the moment, in charge of the team. I'm baffled by his team selection. Junior Firpo travelled. He was in the squad to travel, didn't make the bench, yet he played Nelson Semedo left back and played Sergio Roberto right back. Firpo wasn't even on the bench. Busquets being left out, he's rotating the team despite them having the weekend off last week. Playing the midweek game where they won by 5-1, it didn't take an awful lot out of the Barcelona players. I know Champions League is coming up, but these players are used to it. So I'm really baffled by some of the decisions that he's making at the moment. I was at the start of the season when he was without the front three, but he kept changing the midfield. I'm disappointed with his treatment of Rakitic. I think Rakitic is too good to be constantly left on the bench. And he's been overtaken by Arturo Vidal. It brings different elements to the Barcelona team. But in terms of what Rakitic has achieved, and even when he gets on the pitch now, still looks the same Rakitic. So I'm disappointed with how he's been treated. But as I said, my biggest point is when I watch Barcelona now, they're losing their style, of a traditional Barcelona team. And I think that is a big worry. Whether Barcelona, whether the hierarchy at the club will consider making a change. Is it drastic enough to make a change? I don't think it is at the moment. I can see signs that it could be a troublesome season. I see signs that they're so lucky to have got away with some of the results they've had this season, still be joint top with Real Madrid and Real Sociedad. They've had moments at home where you think everything's clicking and everything's coming back together. They rely so much on Messi. But I don't think the board will see it as drastic enough at the moment to enforce a change. The Slavia Prague performance the other week was absolutely diabolical, another away performance. And they were ripped apart in the Spanish press, which I know is a little bit of a sport for the press in Spain. But it was right. We even saw Barcelona switch off. It was highlighted from a corner against Slavia Prague in the last minute of the game where they were hanging on 2-1. It could have been an exact replica of the goal they conceded against Liverpool from a corner. Players had their back turned to it, so Ter Stegen was going absolutely berserk. They got away with it. The ball was cleared. I think it was the last kick of the game almost. But it just goes to show signs that someone has to still be on top of those players, Messi included, Suarez. They need a leader. They need someone to tell them what to do, to manage games, how to play their best in and do enough to win all the games that they should be winning and not dropping points, not getting walloped by Levante with 3 goals in 7 minutes, not drawing Osasuna, not getting beat at Athletic Bilbao without really ever looking like scoring a goal, getting beat at Granada. These are games that Barcelona shouldn't be dropping points in, and it needs either Valverde to step up and take control and get some consistency back in the team, because the consistency is not there. At home, fantastic. Away, really, really poor this season.
Whew, well done, Terry. Do you need to sit down after that? That was you've taken them apart. Right, well, I've got another couple of questions though before we actually Craig. You've answered Craig's point. He says Iniesta said that Barca shouldn't trade Rakitic. He says I'll go one further. He should be playing more. So there, yeah, we'll tick that one off. Mark asked a question. Of course, more concerned than the loss was the lack of shape from Barcelona. Have the players switched off after two successful seasons? That chimes with your point about them lacking a leader. My particular observation, Terry, on Griezmann, he looks to me like he's still playing for Atletico Madrid in that he's working terrifically hard. I admire Griezmann. You know, his first three passes in that game against Levante missed the mark, and he didn't contribute enough in the attacking penalty area. But there were times, I mean, literally times, at which he was in front of Piqué clearing the ball away. And I'm thinking, well, hang on, they paid an absolute fortune to sign a World Cup winning attacking player. And he's playing like a left wing back or something. They could sign Neymar, it'd be fine. They'd just stick Griezmann at left back and he'd carry on playing the way he is. It's like he's playing a different game. And then Craig's question about the shape. They were literally, they lined them up on the graphic in a 4-3-3. But it's a lie. They're not playing a 4-3-3. When you see the opposition in possession, when Levante, I think they had a free kick, and Barca were as tight as Atletico Madrid in a 4, you couldn't quite call it a 4-4-2 because Messi wasn't in a 2. But Griezmann was tucked in. Arturo Vidal was right side of midfield, tucked in a narrow, tight 4-4-1-1. And it just... It isn't Barcelona. They're not. They're not dominating the games, and it's not even pragmatic because it's not what they should be doing. It's wrong for Barcelona because Barcelona should be hammering teams. It should be ripping teams to pieces.
And then you had Sergio Roberto playing at right back and Semedo left back, who's right footed. Mm. It's no wonder it doesn't bear any resemblance to the Barcelona that we've, I think, I come to admire. I know there'll be Real Madrid supporters listening to the podcast, but as a neutral, you can only admire what we've seen from them in the last decade or so. And it, at the moment, it doesn't. I agree with you. I can't make out the shape. Griezmann, his attitude is probably a fault in this, in terms of he's knuckling down. He's trying to be accepted by Messi and Suarez, and therefore he's trying to double his work rate, which he's more than happy to do. But I saw an incident yesterday where there was an attack down the right-hand side of the pitch. Cross was going to go into the penalty area. Only Suarez was in the box. I think Vidal was trying to join up. Messi had dropped deep. And Griezmann was in two minds whether to attack the penalty box or hold back in case the ball was cleared and he had to run back. Because he weren't in the box, it was an easy cross for Levante to defend, and then he was more than willing to run back and play left-sided wing-back. So it was almost, he was taking, looking at, being pessimistic about, if I get in the box, it's not going to come to me. If we lose it, I'm going to have to chase back. So I'll hover around in the middle and just see what happens, just in case I need to get back. So he's not playing as we saw him play at Atletico. He's playing a different role completely. It's 4-4-2 with Messi and Suarez. Suarez being the focal point. Messi doing what he wants. It's certainly not 4-3-3. Griezmann hasn't played left wing for club or country for 5 years now. So it's untidy. And as I said, it needs someone to take control. It needs maybe Luis Suarez to be benched and for Griezmann to play as the centre forward because he's younger, more agile. He looks to be, in terms of fitness, more reliable. This, don't get me wrong, Suarez, his finishing this season has been sensational. You know, when he's had chances, he's finished them off, he's tucked them away. But his all-round great game is under question now, which then again makes it difficult for a manager to say, right, we can't close down up front anymore. Because Suarez can't do it, and it's not really Messi's strength anymore. So Messi does well. He conserves energy. He goes in quick bursts. I knew that, and I saw Pep Guardiola mention it last week in a press report that that's what Messi does now. He'll have, you know, quick bursts in the game where he can destroy opposition. But that makes it hard for the manager to come up with a style of play where what we saw from Barcelona in their heyday was the front three pressing and winning the ball back quickly, where it was Messi, Pedro and Villa, Messi, Suarez, Neymar. When they were younger, they could do that, but they can't do that anymore. So it needs strong management from Valverde or a change of manager.
Suarez out for 3 weeks, I reckon, because he went off injured, didn't he, with a calf injury. And so lots of Barca fans, I think, are hoping that Griezmann will play as the centre-forward. But that's not what they did, is it? When he went on,
no.
Griezmann didn't go and play up top. There were times at which Arturo Vidal was playing not just for a few seconds in advance of Griezmann, but for considerable periods of the game. Arturo Vidal, but I like Vidal. He's the kind of hard-working guy who will spot an issue and think, oh, no one's up front, I'll go up front, kind of. It seems to be as shapeless as that. So it's not obvious that Griezmann will now step in and play as a centre-forward while Suarez is out.
No, he didn't. Carlos Perez went on the left and Griezmann went on the right and Messi was the centre-forward. So that could be in the next game, Dembele, Messi up front and Griezmann wide on the right. So I thought it was going to be an obvious solution when Suarez came off. I did think, well, Griezmann's going to get half a game at least now playing up front, but he didn't. He just swapped to the right-hand side. Carlos Perez went on the left and it stayed what they hoped. It probably changed from a 4-4-2 to a 4-3-3 then with Messi as the striker. So it's, and then we had Ansu Fati come on, and there was no shape from Barcelona. There was no real plan other than we hope we don't concede, because their defence up until the last couple of games has been back to being solid. And then we've got Messi, and with the form that he's in at the moment, he's scoring a goal a game again since he's returned from injury. And they hope that that's going to be enough.
Right. OK, we'll take a break because we've talked about Barcelona for a long time. So sorry to everybody else. And we'll come back to the rest of La Liga reasonably quickly next.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast. Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Welcome back to La Liga Weekly. It's not football. Never understood that. They should employ some people who speak English in their marketing department. But anyway. So on to Real Madrid, where it very much is football, an exciting 0-0 draw with Real Betis. So it's the story, isn't it? Well, let's give their fans their George, here it is. No team wants to take the lead in La Liga. All 20 teams are allergic to it. A new Madrid wouldn't take advantage of Barca's earlier mishaps. Levante, typical Real Madrid. And even says, I'm rooting for Granada now, which
works out well.
Yes, slightly too far. We've got quite a few from unhappy Real Madrid fans. So, yes, they failed to take advantage. 0-0 draw against Betis. How good or bad were Real Madrid, Terry?
No, they wasn't bad. It doesn't go down as one of their bad performances, which we've seen at three or four this season. I think Betis are underachieving and signs of improvement, of course, boosted by the win against Celta Vigo in midweek. And they look better. They look better organised, a little bit more confidence. That's their third game on the trot at the Bernabeu where they haven't conceded a goal. So they go into that game with a little bit of confidence that they can keep out Real Madrid. Now, I don't think it was a dreadfully bad performance. I'm not going to categorise it as the in a similar fashion as the Barcelona performance. I think it's a different. I think Levante are not as good as Real Betis, despite Levante being higher in the league and on a good little run of form. But I think Betis, when they've got better players than Levante, Betis can be a difficult opponent. And what was interesting was that was the first time this season we've seen Eden Hazard play like he had a blue Chelsea kit on in terms of scoring the goal that was disallowed. So that was it was unfortunately for Real Madrid, he didn't continue doing it, but he had that lovely little run, scored the goal. Unfortunately for Real Madrid, it was disallowed. But I thought it was a pretty solid performance against a more than decent team in Betis, who should be higher up in the league, and I expect to push higher up in the league. So now Betis got good players. It wasn't a dreadful performance of Real Madrid, but it's astonishing that despite Barcelona losing that game, that they somehow still find themselves top of the league this week.
The league table, by the way, if you haven't been keeping up, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad all on 22 points. And then Atletico and Sevilla on 21. Granada, who could have gone top, are in fact sixth on 20 points. That's how close it is. Coffey says, it's early days, but should Los Blancos be worried about Hazard? Obviously, you don't think so much if that was one of his better performances. Lucas says, is Rodrigo showing better quality than Vinicius? I feel Rodrigo has the potential to be the better end product.
Yes, I think at the moment, yes, and I think end product is the key word. I think there will be more of an end product from Rodrigo. It's interesting how it pans out. I'm just going to sort of drift away, not from Real Madrid, but the idea that Rodrigo has forced him into the strongest starting lineup of Real Madrid. Now, that means that Benzema and Hazard are in the front two, and Rodrigo at the expense of Vinicius, Lucas Vazquez, Isco, James, and the big news, the whole Gareth Bale thing has blown up out of nowhere. And it seems like we're back in the summer mode where either he wants out, the club want him out, supporters want him out. The press have been really vindictive on him in Spain at the moment. And it's turned sour so quickly with Gareth Bale. So they're clearly looking for the third player in that front three. Jovic isn't going to be Jovic because he's central. So the performances of young Rodrigo have been brilliant so far. He's been great to watch. He looks like he's got a better final pass into the box and looks to be a better finisher than Vinicius. Vinicius might be more appealing to the eye in terms of one-on-ones against defenders and more tricks and whatever. But no, I think they're both exciting talents. But at the moment, I think I would place Rodrigo just slightly ahead of Vinicius. But then, as I said, it comes to the other players that we're not seeing at the moment. It could make life awkward at Real Madrid this season if all those players I mentioned are sitting on the bench or sitting in the stands when the two young Brazilians are playing week in, week out. So there might be some departures in January. If not, there's going to be a lot of irritated. I didn't even mention Brahim Diaz, who gets nowhere near it, that they clearly want to move on. Mariano Diaz, as we haven't seen all season. So they've got a strong pool of attacking talent. And at the moment, Rodrigo appears to be in favour with Zidane. And I can understand it, to be honest.
Let's have a look at Sevilla versus Atleti. I really enjoyed that game. Richard was there, Richard Cosmale. He was at Sevilla Atleti. Unreal second half. Could not signing Rodrigo have cost Atleti? Just lacking something, aren't they? It's not a unique view, because James says, I know it was pre-season, but have Atleti have gone from scoring for fun to this? He's a fan of Atleti. Our lack of firepower is becoming a real concern. I can't help thinking how much missing Rodrigo in the summer is costing us. Where's Diego Costa gone? And AJ Morales, who's nice of you to get in touch, Morales. What's
played
gone
well
wrong?
Yesterday.
He did. And he's tweeting us. What's gone wrong at Atleti? They've drawn 4 out of 5 league games. What should Simeone do to improve the team? Mike, why do Atleti continue to flatter to deceive? Is it time for a change of direction? All of those frustrations. That said, I enjoyed it. And was it not for that bizarre non-referral to VAR? Like you'd gone to get the metro home or something, and the referee say, can you check that for a penalty? And hello.
It was a bit,
penalty. He stopped it on the line with his hand.
And held it there for two or three seconds. Again, this falls into the similar category of Real Madrid. I think this ain't a bad result for Atletico. I think Sevilla are
they're good, and
they're battle hardened. Sevilla. This is the difference I'm seeing from this Sevilla team to the one we've seen in the 10, 12 years now. They've always had quality. They've always been really good to watch. At times, you could say, in terms of pushing for a league title, they've lacked that toughness, physicality. But this lot don't. This Sevilla team, which I saw in the pre-season friendly against Liverpool when they upset Jurgen Klopp and one or two others involved with Liverpool with their physical approach to a pre-season friendly. They are almost emulating, in terms of style, Atletico Madrid. They're hard to score against. They're not a team you're going to enjoy playing against, which could be a criticism aimed at Sevilla in the past, where it's always been tough to play the Sanchez-Pizjuan, but away from home, they could get rolled over by Real Madrid. I saw them once, I think probably 5-0 down by half-time, and Real Madrid put the brakes on in the second half because they're a Champions League match midweek. So Sevilla always had that type of performance in them. But this season, I'm seeing a tough, physical Sevilla, and thankfully, they've got the quality still. So I think this standalone match, Atletico drawing away at the Sanchez-Pizjuan, they missed a penalty from Diego Costa. He had a goal disallowed, which was right, it was offside. But I think as a standalone result, it's a decent point. The problem is they've drawn five of the last six. They won their first three, and we expected them to continue in that run of form. Then they lost to Real Sociedad. Since then, five draws out of the last six is utterly ridiculous. Celta at home. Had they draw at home to Celta Vigo? Real Madrid, they've drawn with. It's not, that's a derby match. Two great teams. They've drawn at Valladolid, Valencia, Alaves in midweek, and then yesterday at Sevilla. So the Sevilla one isn't a bad draw. Real Madrid isn't a bad draw. But the other ones, you think they should be winning. So that's the problem, not the result against Sevilla. It's the fact they're not scoring enough goals. And a lot of those draws I'm looking at, in particular the game against Alaves, the game against Valladolid, that nothing happens in the first half. Literally nothing. No one has a shot, neither team. So Atletico appear to be going into games with that same mentality. Let's be hard to beat. Let's be hard to score against. Let's make it difficult for teams to break us down. And then the anxiety creeps in the second half when they suddenly start realising that we're in danger of dropping points here. We better liven ourselves up. Simeone is making a lot of changes in the early part of each game, the second half, where perhaps his team selection isn't positive enough at the start of the match. There always seems to be an improvement in the second half performance, but they are coming up short. They need to start scoring more goals. The game against Alaves, perfect example, 1-0 up. Morata come off the bench. The Morata then has a one-on-one versus the goalkeeper and didn't take it. Then they get undone by... not Alaves playing brilliant and forcing their way back into the game, but a moment of sheer individual spectacular goal from Lucas Perez when he holds off defenders, cuts inside and unleashes a pole driver into the top corner. So that happens if you're only leading by one goal and you're content to defend a one-goal lead. So the attitude has to change from Atletico, but the result against Sevilla this weekend... and as a standalone result, there was a decent performance and a decent result. It probably was a fair result as well. I thought both teams were really good.
So, Terry, that brings us to a number of questions that people have been obviously waiting to ask us for a few weeks. Brownie says, with the top sides dropping points all over the shop, could we be looking at the more open title race Terry was hoping for? Third of the way through and no one has pulled away. Taj, after the midweek game, I was scared we were going back to the bad old days when the big two won big every week. Luckily, it seems like La Liga is back to the pre-Messi CR7 days when the league was tight and games were tightly contested. It's beautiful, he says, to see the big two struggle. And Argo, why is this close at the top of La Liga? Is it a case of big teams being worse or the smaller teams being better than before? I, he says, think it's a bit of both. While we're on, so we might as well mention that Real Sociedad joint leaders of La Liga, because, of course, it's not really down to goal difference. After Porto inspired them to the win over Granada, so tight, isn't it? You know, Granada could have been top. Now they're sixth.
Yep, I agree with the last tweet. Who was that from again? I was trying to keep hold of the names.
Argo.
Yes, I agree with that. I think what we've got now is Real Madrid and Barcelona, and arguably Atletico, can come into that category of not being as good as they were. But when Real Madrid winning 3-4 Champions Leagues in 5 or 6 seasons, or 3 consecutive Champions Leagues, that's a special team. When Barcelona were with Messi and Neymar, Suarez, Villa, Pedro, Pep Guardiola in charge, that's a special team as well. So Luis Enrique as well comes into that bracket. What we're seeing now isn't that Barcelona. It's not that Real Madrid we see, and it isn't the Atletico Madrid that won the league. So if you take them at that level and they've dropped, now we're seeing better teams throughout the rest of the league. There is the gap has closed. Do I still think anyone outside of those big three are going to win it? No, I think it'd be one of those. You could make a really good case for Atletico that if they liven themselves up and start scoring goals, then with their defensive record, they are in good shape, just being a point off the pack when, you know, off the top of the table when they've been relatively poor. So, but I think that the TV revenue that we've seen increase to the clubs like Sevilla, Betis, Real Sociedad, and you work your way down the league table, has made Villarreal better teams, better, they've been able to afford better players. If you're not at your best, if you're Barcelona, Atletico and Real Madrid, and you're not at your best, you can be punished now in La Liga. And that was clearly evident. Levante's 3 goals in 7 minutes. Betis haven't been playing great, but put up a really strong performance against Real Madrid. Sevilla, more than matched Atletico Madrid. And that's, I hope, is going to continue for the rest of the season.
Is it fair to use Europe as a bit of a yardstick in this? If the La Liga clubs are all out relatively early on, is that a reasonable place to judge and say maybe therefore it's not a strong La Liga?
It's hard to judge it, isn't it, in terms of was it a strong La Liga when Real Madrid and Barcelona were getting 100 points and nobody else was getting any and Barcelona were winning Champions Leagues? Real Madrid had that period at that time where they kept getting beat by Lyon. But Real Madrid, at that time when Pellegrini was in charge and Jose Mourinho came in, that they were a fantastic football team, Real Madrid, then. So it's I think how we judge the European competitions is always difficult to assess whether that's the strength of the league. I mean, you can at the last season in particular with Liverpool, yes, fantastic team. Spurs, not particularly great, but got to a Champions League final. Chelsea didn't have a great season. Arsenal didn't. Arsenal had a dreadful Europa League final against Chelsea. It's. I think they're two completely different animals, if I'm being perfectly honest. Do we want to see two juggernauts, as you described them once, running away with the league title, being 20 points clear, which we've got in the Premier League now? Or do we prefer what we're seeing in Spain, where there's been more of a levelling out? I expect better performances from the three big teams that I've mentioned. I actually prefer domestically to see a league title race that, I mean, in the past couple of seasons, it's only been one team that's ever going to win it. So hopefully this season, that's not going to be the case. But I'd love to see, you know, the top eight all in with a chance of, you know, beating each other each week. Results are not as predictable as they have been in the past in La Liga, and long that may that continue. How they all do in Europe, I've no idea. I think Sevilla obviously will be the pick of the bunch from, in terms of the Europa League, from La Liga's perspective. And we can never write off the, you know, Atletico, Barcelona, Real Madrid in the Champions League. So it's a difficult one.
Right, so we've got a few more questions. Let's rattle through these, shall we? Pete says, hi, how do Villarreal get more points out of a very good team? Superkeeper, strong defence, midfield, brilliant Cazorla, abundance of quality strikers, yet 0-0 draw against Athletic. It's not a disastrous situation again for Villarreal, but they're a bit frustrating.
Yes, I was bitterly disappointed. Javier Kieka was irritating me again this week, and I know I've moaned about him in the past, and I'm trying not to moan about anyone in particular. I think there's too much of that in punditry now, where people are picking on players, picking on managers, picking on teams. So I thought he was doing okay this season, but then against Eibar, when Villarreal are not in Europe, so they've got the 38 league games, maybe a cup run in the Copa del Rey. Bearing in mind, they've never, ever won a trophy. They should have a go in the Copa del Rey, but they won't with Kieka. He decided to throw everything up in the air in the midweek game against Eibar. Left out Cazorla, left out Gerard Moreno, left out Moy Gomez, and thought we got away with it with a late equaliser, only to be denied when Eibar scored a 95th minute winner. So that momentum that they had from the Friday night game against Alaves when they won 4-1, brilliant performance, really exciting to watch. And he lost. I don't have any idea whatsoever why he would think that it's a good idea to rest players, rotate players, important players as well, and lose that momentum and then back it up. It was unlucky against Athletic Bilbao. The goalkeeper was Unai Simon, who hasn't been great this season, if I'm being honest. Young goalkeeper has made a few mistakes. He was sensational against Villarreal. So it was a game that Villarreal should have won. But my advice, if he's listening to the podcast, is to don't mess about. It's 38 league games and a Copa del Rey campaign. Keep that momentum going for as long as you possibly can. Players get an understanding of playing with each other. Make it hard for players. If they're not happy, if they're sat on the bench, then make them, you know, fight for a place in the strongest starting 11. There's no excuse for Villarreal not to play his strongest team in every match possible in the league this season. If they do that, then they can finish top four. They've got the quality.
Yeah, if he's not listening, it's his loss, isn't it? Verdi Blanco says, what's your view on Jesper Cillessen? How he's performed for Valencia so far? They got a win against Espanyol, who, despite their change of manager, still haven't had a change of fortunes.
No, he played well yesterday. Espanyol, it's the third or fourth time I've probably said this. They're looking better. But they, you know, the obvious conclusion to make is that they've only got the one win under Pablo Machin, and they need to improve on that. This was Espanyol. Valencia was a really tight game. Mark Rucker with the penalty, Parejo with another penalty. We've seen so many penalties this weekend, and then Maxi Gomez with the winner. But that was really close. But almost at the end of the game, you could see that the two managers, one looked mightily relieved, Solaris, that his team had got the win, because it was a tight game. And you saw Pablo Machin look at it and think, all right, we've been beaten, but he can see positive signs. So I think Espanyol, I don't know if they're going to be okay, if I'm being honest, because I'm looking at the bottom of the table. I don't see much changing now with the teams that are down there. But Cillessen made a couple of really good saves, one really good save. So he should be a good signing for Valencia.
Last three seasons, Terry, so of the at this stage of the season, the three teams in the bottom three, two of them went down, all three of them went down. And I think if you look across the European leagues at last season as well, it's a very similar picture. So we tend to think, oh, everything's still up for grabs. But at this stage of the season, the relegation battle has formed, hasn't it? And when we know who will be in there roughly come the end of the season. Obviously, one team every now and again plummets down, as Girona did last season, but it's generally grim reading if you're down there already. So Leganés 1, Eibar 2, we'll give them a mention. And obviously, Valladolid 3, Mallorca 0. Sandro with a goal. Hooray!
Goal as well.
Yeah, I know.
Brilliant goal.
It's such a... in my view, Sandro made the wrong decisions. About his level, about the moves that he made. So it's good. You know, fingers crossed he gets some more goals. One more question. Shane, Chimi Avila, will he still be at Osasuna come the end of January? A 4-2 win against Alaves and another one of his goals.
Oh, what a goal. I love Chimi Avila. I know he's really popular with supporters that have been watching La Liga in the last season and this season. I hope he stays in La Liga. I hope he stays, to be honest, I hope he stays at Osasuna, because the run they're on, the position they're finding themselves in the league is, I think what we've seen in recent seasons, John, is early signs of the newly promoted teams haven't been anywhere near strong enough. Last season, Rayo and Huesca, right from the very first few weeks of the season, you knew it was going to be a struggle. Vital had just about crept over the line. With the newly promoted teams this season, there's no three obvious candidates that are getting caught adrift from the teams that were promoted from the Segunda. Mallorca are finding it hard, no points away from home. That's going to be hard to maintain status in the top division if that doesn't improve. Against Vital, I actually cheered when Sandro Ramirez scored. It's that empathy for an attacking player that hasn't scored a goal for 23 months that smashes one in from a run from the halfway line and a 30-yard finish. But I think goal of the weekend just pips it for me in terms of technical skill was Chimi's goal in a really good performance. And that's 31 without defeat now for Osasuna at home, which is some record. I mean, it really is. And it really gets into the opponent's heads now that they're going to a place where they just think they're invincible. Chimi is a great player to watch. I mean, he's got kit on from the 1980s. He's got my shorts on. The left-footed, half-volley finish is top draw. I think you've got to be a certain type of team to take him, if I'm being perfectly honest. I couldn't see him playing for anyone in the Premier League. I don't think anyone would have the courage to give a player that freedom to play in the way that Chimi Avila does and thrives upon. You know, he's doing spectacular things. He's making mistakes, but you know, there's always something he's got, you know, something up his sleeve in terms of his finishing ability. Love watching him play. From this season's point of view, I hope he stays at Osasuna and they continue the good run of form they're showing now.
Right, that is everybody done. Tom Morgan's asked us a question. We're not going to answer it, Tom. It's too big a question. Name your best 11, excluding the European clubs. You can't just drop that one on us. We'll give that some thought. We'll put it out for public discussion and bring the country together and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, in fact, so using our La Liga weekly...
But do it Christmas Eve, John. We'll go canvassing on Christmas Eve.
yeah, that's what everybody wants. Yes, yes. Carol singers or political canvassers, who knows? Anyway, so we will be discussing, Tom. Remind me, Tom, if we haven't. So give it some thought, your best 11, excluding the teams that are playing European football. And we'll be back discussing next week's La Liga a week from now. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.